Thank you very much for coming. I've been looking around. I hope people are going to come to listen to what I've got to say. And I'm happy I found some people. And I'm sure you're very interested in this issue. It's not a very popular issue in some respect, but those who are into it know what it's all about, especially those people who have been practically into farming. They know the scourge of drought. So I've been interested in this topic, and I worked on it for 4 years thereabout. And coming to Australia as a student, doing my MBA, towards the end of my MBA, we were taking an investment course. And I came across catastrophic bond, weather insurance and stuff like that, and it was so interesting. So I'd already put up my application for a PhD, and I just thought, oh, given all the options, this sounds very interesting. But it wasn't as easy as I thought, you know. But I'm happy. Now, I could say some things about Australian drug policy. But remember, I've got only 30 minutes, and some of you here will probably know more about it than myself. And I'll be very happy to have your input. Talking about Australian drug policy, it's no doubt that Australia is the land, or a land, if not the land, at least a land, of droughts and flooding rains. That is very clear. Unfortunately, that is not well reflected in the amount of support that Australian farmers are obtaining from government, as you can see. We are second only to our neighboring sister New Zealand, or should I call it New Zealand, our brother or something? Yeah. New Zealand, look at the measure of support. Australia, look at the measure of support. Whereas other countries that are possibly never going to be recognized as lands of drought and flooding rains are having much higher support than Australian farmers. So what's exceptional circumstance? Exceptional circumstance was this idea that when weather events, dryness, lack of rain, happens in about once in 20 to 25 years, then the government recognizes that as an exceptional circumstance. Otherwise, farmers are on their own. So the problem with exceptional circumstance is that if you have a farmer who is farming here, another farmer who is farming here, and there is drought on this farm, of course it could encroach into this region. So what makes the government to support farm A and not farm B? There was no line on the map. Even if there was a line on the map, I mean, it has really encroached into. So what will make the government to support you and not support me? So that's very difficult. And one other thing is that the support system was such that the Commonwealth is the principal and the states were agents. Of course, if I'm Premier of Queensland and there is drought in Queensland, or let's not even call it drought, any slight shortage of rainfall, I will advocate that the Commonwealth should pay my farmers. That gives me political will, because I'm not the one who is going to bear the loss. It's the Commonwealth. So it's a principal agency problem. So the agent is going to be very happy to say this is an exceptional circumstance, at least to be seen as doing something, you know, because the Commonwealth is going to take the responsibility. So there were a lot of issues with that. So now, one other thing that made it difficult was that there was asset test. Now, if I'm a farmer and I own my properties worth $5 million, I'm not entitled to the mainstream welfare benefit, even though I'm not able to get any income from my $5 million worth of assets. So that means that farmers could be starving, but because they have barren lands that are not yielding, they are $5 million rich. Whereas the rest of us, if we are unemployed, could get to settle in and get some benefits. So farmers were crying. In fact, it was so painful because the last 2 years, 2014, 2013, we had drought in Queensland, and some farmers were actually shooting themselves. It was so bad, it was so pathetic. And what now happened is that we can't just keep waiting on the government
if the government responds to the farmers, that's good. And come to think of it, young children of nowadays possibly don't know where strawberries are coming from. They are coming from coast, whether they are growing from coast or on the ground. They don't care. You know, and Australian children have never really suffered hunger, unlike in European countries, where they know what it means to be hungry. So these are some of the issues. And Australia is really exposed on three fronts. One, we've talked about Australia being the land of floods and droughts. That's well recognized. Besides, the inputs are not produced within Australia. So that makes Australian farmers susceptible to foreign exchange. Three, we cannot consume all our outputs. We have to export majority of it. So that's another source of risk, input-wise, output-wise, and in terms of our land. So what do? We are exposed. There is no doubt about that. So having said that background, let's go on to the objectives of my study. One, I discovered that previous studies, they have always captured this analysis with the assumption that prices will be constant over the period of analysis, which is not true. The problem with that is it's assuming that if we assume that prices were stable, in my own case, I analyzed the data from 1971 to 2010. So if I assumed that prices were constant over the 40-year period, it means that I have not factored in the cost of price edging into my analysis. So that is going to overestimate the worth of insurance. In this case, I considered weather insurance. But I still have to talk about insurance in a broader context. So another thing is neglecting the covariance between price, commodity price, and yield. There is a relationship, an inverse relationship. So we would have neglected the cost of price stabilization, or put in another way, we would have neglected the inverse relationship between commodity prices and yield. Because when there is drought, output will be low. And because of that low demand, prices will compensate. Unfortunately, if we have two farmers, farmer A has lost everything. If farmer B is having 50% of the usual output, all the benefits comes to the second farmer. So, but on the whole, it's well reflected that at farm level and aggregate level, that covariance is well, that correlation is well reflected, but it's more so at aggregate level. So I want to see what is the edging efficiency of weather index insurance. But I'm taking it beyond usual analysis that have been done in the past, seeing the impact of price stability and when prices were allowed to vary. So also I looked at the diversification of an insurance pool. Of course, diversification will be limited in this case. As a farmer, you have diversified in many ways. You could diversify in many ways. Plant your crops in Queensland, plant in Western Australia. And for the insurer, you could have your farmers from Queensland and Western Australia. You know, I was just taking two regions because I had only 3 years of scholarship, you know. I couldn't just do everything everywhere. So I just took those extreme ends and to look at the prospect of diversification. But I'm very quite sure that farmers diversify beyond what I've modeled. And I wasn't satisfied. Towards the end of my studies in 2013, I was supposed to end February 2014, my scholarship terminated, but I wasn't satisfied. I'm more of a holistic researcher. I wanted to know what do they have to say. If I'm thinking of these people and I'm just doing desk analysis, I wouldn't have done well enough. So I went to the farmers to interview them, and a lot of issues that I discovered in literature actually cropped up.
So having said the background, and you've been told my objectives, let's go on. Incentive theory. I've told you part of it. Principal agent theory, which is very popular. And we have what we call public interest. Like, government will tell you, we are doing this in public interest. Everything is always likely going to be done in public interest. That is one theory. There is the capture theory. If actuaries of Australia want to implement a policy and we are powerful enough, we can make that to happen. It doesn't matter our size. So in which case, we would have captured the government. And that is more of what is happening in the United States. The fact checks, the farm policy, risk management are actually going to the big boys, not so much to the people who are doing the actual work on it. You know, because these guys, they are captured. Government, so to say. Public interest, capture theory, and we have the market regulation theory. That goes on the side of the government. If I'm in power, and I can tell that this policy is going to affect my electoral bid, I'm going to make policies that will favor. That tends to be on the side of the public, which is what is expected, on the side of the big boys, and on the side of those. The increment. So basically, where can we say that Australia belongs? Definitely, Australian government is not captured in any way in this respect by the insurance industry. Definitely, Australian government is making efforts to do everything in public interest. But literature and my interviews suggest that Australian farmers are a minuscule part of the population and really do not have so much of a voice. Meaning that they do not wield enough influence to influence votes. And the implication of that is that they are not getting as much support as they could possibly get. And there's so much to discuss around there. In my thesis, I'm trying to publish papers, which I would have, if I published them, could have referred it to. And pricing models. We use bonds analysis based on historical facts. Unfortunately, climate change is changing that. So we can no longer make forecasts into the future based on what are things that have happened in the past. There are more sophisticated means of pricing, but I'm still learning. And I'm also an actuarial student, as he told you. And there is so much to talk about in terms of legal and regulatory treatment of risk management. But before going further on that, let me talk a little bit about pricing models. Apart from bonds analysis, I've told you that variability of prices have not been captured previously, but there are efforts now to do that because we are now thinking of revenue insurance as opposed to the usual multi-peril crop insurance, which has been played with moral hazard and adverse selection. I don't want to be talking so much about that so that we can discuss the results and maybe possibly come back to this. In terms of legal and regulatory treatment, there is a difference between derivatives and insurance. Derivatives do not have insuring interest. And the tendency is for farmers to turn to gamblers or for gamblers to turn to farmers if policies are conducive enough for them to do that. Now, there's so much to talk about there as well. Debt structure and farm equity. There's a lot going on in the rural sector. Rural debt is worth almost 70 billion US, almost 70 billion Australian dollars today. And that is partly because there isn't sufficient cushion to manage the risk over the past 30 years. Farms are getting bigger. Farmers are getting fewer. Although unit farms are getting bigger, overall, area that is being cropped is actually getting smaller. There is a trend, a whole lot of argument around there that I don't want to take us into. And the next thing is farm structures. Should we adopt the mega farm structures, which is giving concern to some people, or should we continue with that family structure? Of course, family structure will be more resilient. And the truth is that from our own end, Australians
have actually benefited so much from rural schools. And that is why we can walk into coast and get whatever we want to get. In the past 30 years, there has been a decline, and if that trend continues for the next few decades, Australians will feel a pinch if our tourists don't take it. Now, there are global examples that I don't want to talk about at the moment, but weather insurance, to be specific, has actually facilitated credit to farmers. Here's the methodology. I used a mixed paradigm because I actually interviewed some farmers as well, not just the quants. I used two pricing models, 22 states in Queensland and 41 in Western Australia, because some of the data were not complete. Like, so I made sure that I had rainfall of at least 95% of what was needed over the period. Now, if I decided to put in the averages into the missing values, it could actually distort my data more than otherwise. So I decided to assume those values were actually zeros. There was actually no rain. And three levels of weather insurance, like fifth percentile contract, implies once in 20 years drought, meaning twice in 40 years, and so on, up to the 10th and the 30th. So the difference between my benchmark and what obtains forms a kind of percentage pricing of the contract, then multiply by the insurable interest, which is the liability. Now, I focused on certainty equivalence of revenue. Of course, I use conditional tail expectation and mean root square loss, but this looks more interesting to me. But I presented the three results, as you will see later. And it's just about whether a measure of the willingness of farmers to pay for insurance under put price assumptions. I use loss ratio to measure the diversification. Excuse me. And I analyze the response of the farmers. Now, in talking about the willingness of farmers to pay, I simply took a log of their revenue. Remember that in this, I've not factored in the costs. So I've not actually focused on their profits. So that makes it a bit more challenging. Basically, I acknowledge that there is a lot of work to be done in this area, but the best I could do within the period of time and resource constraints I've actually done here. So the assumption that commodity prices were constant, I believe, misestimates the worth of insurance, because even in the course of my interview, it wasn't part of my recorded interview. When I went to the farms, one farmer was telling me, "Oh, I wish I did not forward sell my sorghum because there was drought." So fortunately for him, his sorghum performed better because he was not as far west as most other farmers that were hit very hard. So he could have gotten a higher price. So that made me feel, yes, I've not even started the interview. I just came for the interview. You know, that made me, yes, what I found in my quant was actually correct. So the industry is now acknowledging the fact that revenue insurance would actually be more profitable for farmers than the multiple peril crop insurance. Because multiple peril crop insurance insures the farmer against almost every peril. And of course, farmers nowhere is more profitable for them to grow what than the insurer, no matter how smart they are. They know, they've been working there, some of them, for decades. You know, they know what to expect. So it's not expected that insurers will be able to discover all of this. Another thing is that, so we call that some of these things moral hazard, adverse selection, and all that. So multiple peril crop insurance has not been profitable anywhere unsubsidized. So we are moving towards revenue insurance. But there's a problem with that. There is a problem with that as well. You will need the records of the farm. So what if I decide today to get into the farming business and I don't have any record? The good news about revenue insurance is that it's specific to each farm. You know, unlike multi-peril crop insurance, that is regional, which promotes adverse selection and moral hazard because of the asymmetry of the information. But as specific as that is, it's difficult. Its uptake in Australia is facing a lot of constraints. It's been happening in Canada and US since US since 2009. And Latevo, I don't know whether you've heard about him, is making very frantic efforts to make sure that he gets this started. But there are a lot of other issues. So there is no perfect deal anywhere. That is what I've discovered. Everything has its pros and cons. So the basic thing that the government could do is to just give support to the market to evolve and let there be competition. In any case, the willingness to pay varies by location. I discovered that Queensland farmers were more willing to pay than Western Australian farmers. Why? I discovered that the coefficient of variation in Queensland was higher than that of Western Australia. So I used the national price. So it's not like there was a price that was specific to Queensland or and to Western Australia. It's just national price, national domestic price, constant and varied. So that variability could only be due to locational differences. Now, while this may be a good rationale for revenue insurance, weather insurance is cheaper and easily diversifiable. If you have a pool of weather insurance, it's easy for you to reinsure, unlike revenue insurance. So I will not recommend one above the other, although my work focused on weather insurance. Now, this is what I've got. The results were terrible. I was just cracking my head. How do I understand this? What is happening here? Let's look at this. This is conditional tail expectation. What this means is that in 40 years, for the fifth percentile contract, I'm going to have 4 years. Oh, that's for the 10th. In 20 years, I have one payment. In 40 years, I have two payments. So in those 2 years, if those 2 years of payment happen to be the 2 years with the strongest drought, then the insurance should raise the revenue of the farmer in those 2 years. That is what it implies. Now, if that happens, then we expect that the variance should reduce in the revenue distribution. But I can't just use the variance, standard deviation, but I use the mean root square loss that is calculating the variance based on the bottom part that is being analyzed. So if there is a mismatch, then that is actually going to increase the variance. If there is a mismatch, then this is not going to work. So it depends on the extent to which this has worked. So certainty equivalence of revenue is taking the log of those the revenue distribution to see their willingness to pay. But let's look at this. Number one, if we look at Queensland, it tends to be at the top, just looking at everything altogether. But let's slice this into two. This is assuming prices were constant. This is assuming prices were variable. So the pattern here is more profitable for Queensland at the 5th, then followed by the 10th, and then the 30th. If you look at Western Australia, it is less so. So it's more profitable for Queensland farmers to take weather insurance than Western Australian farmers because of the variability. Actually, one of the farmers later told me when I was interviewing them that, look, we are moving to another region where there is more stable rainfall. So what would affect the insurance, the decision to take insurance, as you see here, is depending on this. Now, looking at this, this is variable price. You see that because of the variability in prices, everything has gone down. The conditional tail expectation has gone down. So meaning that The industry has not really looked into the effect of price variability. If we just base everything on constant price, and farmers know that it's not it's not constant. So that's conditional utilization. If you look here, this is about the variance. When it's actually low, it's actually better, because we want to minimize the downside risk. So, but this is not full variance. It's variance based on whether it's twice in the 40 years, four times in the 40 years, and so on. So, looking at it here, Queensland is still better. Definitely, because the lower, if it's down, is better. Because what I did was to measure the difference between the case of no insurance and that of insurance. So, that difference is what I've done here. So, it's making positive impact when it's negative. So basically, that locational difference is still there. Overall, both states, and look at it for Western Australia, so that is also showing the effect of pooling risk together. When we get to variable price, we see that in all, there was a fall, because price and yield tend to move in such a way that reduces that variance naturally. You know, there was a fall, and the patterns look the same, but there was a general fall, and it becomes less profitable for Queensland farmers to insure, because price itself is edging there. Now, this one mystified me a little bit. Looking at it, I would have expected that insurance should be more profitable at the lower tail, the fifth, if that had happened under variable price alone, like it happened here, looking at it, here, it's like, it's actually not so. But if I look at the overall results, it tends to be that insurance, let's forget about the variable price one, insurance overall is profitable at the fifth percentile, then less so at the tenth percentile, although marginally so, but not profitable here. That's what I expected. But that's overall results. When you look at Queensland, it's like, insurance is actually less profitable here, but the case of Western Australia is the other way around, but they're generally negative. So basically, there is locational differences which farmers were quite aware of. So which means that there is going to be adverse selection in a pool of weather contracts, insurance contracts generally. So if we now try to spread it beyond that, we would have, you know, a situation where only farmers that are having specific characteristics will be taking insurance. So should we now support weather insurance? Should we support revenue insurance? What should we do? The government should just create a conducive environment for people to make their choices. There is actually, from literature, there was no means of saying that this is the best decision. But each farmer has an optimal portfolio of risk management choices. And that is what the government should focus on. Talking about risk pooling.
20 minutes. You got that 10 minutes. Okay. Five minutes.
Talking about risk pooling, here, I want this one to be clear first. This is the fifth percentile, twice in 40-year contract for Queensland. We see that when risk is pooled over a 10-year period, the loss ratio tends towards one, is reducing. But let's see the case of risk pooling. Just for 1 year, the loss ratio is very high. That is, the ratio of the premium to what is being paid out. So, over time, we expect things to be different, to be more profitable. Whereas, if it's just for the short term, the converse is the case. So, looking at this, we see that generally, when we are talking of 30th percentile contract, the loss ratio reduces between Queensland and Queensland, 5th and 30th, additional 10th, just to minimize space. Western Australia is less so. All shares, when you combine all locations, Western Australia and Queensland, over time, over a very long period of time, the risk becomes lower. So, I believe Australia has the capacity to diversify the risk, and especially because But weather insurance is easy to reinsure. So that is one advantage of weather index insurance. But I am not recommending one insurance type above the other. Rather, the government should focus on enhancing the market to operate. And this is one area where actuaries could take the lead, as I've said. In looking at the opinions of farmers about the issues at stake, one very interesting comment they made during the focus group interview was that it's not in the DNA of Australian farmers to pay taxes. And I believe that's not just typical of Australian farmers. I think it's just in the blood of every human not to pay taxes. As much as they could legally combine their options, you know. But one thing that Australian farmers are doing is that they are making some optimal choices in their attempt to dodge taxes. And the government may think that, okay, instead of spending $1 billion on, let's say, premium rebates to farmers, let's invest that into something else. The truth is that the government is also not going to get some possible taxes that could have been paid by farmers. This is what I'm saying. If a farmer is profitable and declares a profit of $1 million, let us say, if there is a tax benefit for making that decision, you know, as a result of insurance taking, the farmer should more likely declare profit. But let's take the case of a farmer who is on the margin. He's likely going to make his decisions in such a way that he will declare no taxes. Whereas if there are incentives for them to declare taxes, they will manage their options differently. You know. So I'm recommending tax rebates on insurance premium. So not on for one particular insurance type, but for any form of risk management. That except derivatives, of course. Otherwise, that will facilitate gambling. So that's one reason why weather derivatives could be tricky. So except its metamorphosis into insurance on its own. So Australian farmers versus other farmers, they are doing well, but it's been more on rural sweat. Insurance will be more effective than what it is, as the farmers themselves said. Farmers were not actually so much aware of the risk management options available, because they don't take to them anyway. Australian drought policies are cross purposes. Why? You are saying that farmers should be giving benefit. Now there is asset test waiver, so every farmer is able to get to assess benefits. So what that means is that farmers have incentives to be unprofitable, because they are now licensed to collect tax benefits. So if I'm going to declare $50,000 profit, I know that will deny me access to welfare benefit. I'd rather use that to buy a machine. You know, that tends to be what they are doing. Livestock and growers variance. It's like livestock farmers are actually benefiting more from government, because they could curry sympathy when there is a drought. You see the animals dying, so they are the first point of call. So farmers are now diversifying, which is good in a way. But beyond that diversification of growing crops and livestock farming, they may be doing that, from what I can read from their responses, they may be doing that so that when those distributions are being made in terms of drought, they are also able to get a part of it. You know. So I concluded that the failure of previous efforts is due to lack of incentives. Diligent farmers are actually being penalized. Mispricing has been based on price, commodity price and locational differences. Insured farmers are at a disadvantage. For instance, let's think of stamp duties. Insurance will pass the cost of stamp duties on insurance to the farmers who choose to insure. Farmers who choose to insure will not be entitled to welfare benefit, because they will not likely be profitless. You know. So it's like things are cross purposes. But I'm trying to say that insurance, if tax incentives are factored into it, may not be as expensive as it sounds. Let's look at this. Australia grapples at crop policy with the tenets of self-reliance, mutual obligation, and reciprocity, it emphasized. That is very obvious. Now, it has been argued in literature that the exceptional circumstance payment makes farmers hold on to their assets in anticipation of welfare payments. Because if there are no welfare payments, a farmer who is profitless will probably sell the asset. But if you are sure you are going to be getting welfare payments, you will hold on to it. And if you are going to give it up, you will have to demand for more. Because the welfare payment actually, if impounded into the value of your assets, will add the price. Now, the payment was worth $1 billion in 2007-2008 drought, and only 23% of farmers affected by drought benefited. So by my calculation, if all farmers were paid, as it would have been under the recent policy changes, $4.35 billion would have been paid out to farmers as welfare. And in anticipation of such benefits, farmers will equally demand for more to give up their assets. And since the probability of getting such payments will be higher because of the asset waiver, they will actually hold on more tightly to their assets. So if we are saying the exceptional circumstance, that's the argument, Freebane's. Professor Freebane, Keegan, a lot of professors argue that of welfare benefit is not the best. I'm saying that the current policy change actually increases the probability of a farmer getting welfare benefit. It was exceptional circumstance before, and it was like that. So what it means is that if this $4.35 billion, for instance, is invested into tax incentives on insurance premium, you would have to subtract the amount of taxes that farmers will have to pay to be eligible to that premium. So that reduces this amount. And farmers overall will make optimal decisions. You know, so tax incentives on insurance premium may not be as expensive as it sounds. And I still believe that this is one way Australian government would eventually have to go. So I'm recommending that tax incentives on insurance premium will facilitate the evolution of the market and enhance productivity. Whether derivatives should retain its structural and functional forms, but should metamorphose into insurance. Otherwise, gamblers will become farmers, and farmers will become gamblers. Legal requisitions for the establishment of the revenue insurance model should consider the avoidance of third-line forces. There is a lot of anti-competitive issues that may come into play if revenue insurance takes place, if the market the way it is in its present form. And stamp duties on agro insurance should be abolished in Australian states and territories. Otherwise, diligent farmers will be paying too much for hedging. They may get penalized for hedging the risk. So there's a lot to discuss around here, but we have 30 minutes, and I believe there are a lot of people here that would possibly have more to tell me, and you know, we interact on that basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that fascinating talk. We've got, I think, around about 5 minutes for questions. Sorry, we went a little bit over, but I'll open the floor for any questions.
Just a quick one, Peter Martin. Thanks for the talk, Adi. This will be a very naive question, but I wouldn't mind just a quick outline on the difference between revenue insurance and weather insurance. How do those two contracts differ?
Yes, thank you. Weather insurance is based strictly on weather readings. So it's like, this is a rain gauge. If the water here falls below this benchmark, then it will have very terrible impact on crops. So the difference between this and wherever the rainfall is will determine your payment. If it goes to zero, then you have the maximum payment. For revenue insurance, it's about a given price multiplied by the commodity volume of production that you derive. So there's a way that maybe it's based on futures, or the price is determined before the planting season. So it's based on whether your revenue falls short of that anticipated revenue or not. Yeah. So what it means is that whether insurance is cheaper, because all I need to do is to just keep looking at this. Once it gets there, and it's going to be real-time payment. Real-time payment is cheap. But the problem with that is, if this weather station is here, and this is a farm covered by this weather station, the amount of rainfall experienced here will be different from the amount of rainfall experienced there. So that is basis risk. But the good thing here is that drought is usually systemic in Australia. So it affects a large expanse of land. So most people with this weather station will probably experience drought because it's actually at the very extreme. Yeah. But that creates a problem to the insurer because the risk is systemic. So that's difficult. So there's a lot of top-level discussions going on where I actually spoke with the CEOs of the companies offering derivatives, offering revenue insurance, and each person felt this is going to work, this is going to work. And the revenue guy was saying, look, the industry has been missing it for so long. Look at it. This is what farmers want. Their revenue is what they want to protect. They don't care about their yield. What? And the weather insurance person was saying, oh, there is no more basis risk. We know how to handle it. And some other, actually, I found the evidence of basis risk when I was interviewing the farmers. I was close to a farmer's place and he was saying, this is the reading in my farm and here is different, you know. So these are big issues. But whatever the issues are, I didn't pretend to have solved the problems. But I'm saying I want to sensitize this community to the fact that there is a problem. I listened to the second plenary session, Prof. Alain Dupont, and I felt like, look, this is one area that Australia has got a strength, and this community actually has to take a lead in advising the government on the best line of action. Thank you.
Thanks, Eddie.
Do you have time for another?
Yeah, go.
I was just going to ask, one of those early slides, just I wasn't sure if I was interpreting it right, but it seemed that you were saying that Australia had an unusually strong negative correlation between yield and price compared to other countries.
Yes.
And therefore, if I interpret that right, they're better hedged, their revenues are better hedged than other countries, because when yield goes down, price goes up, so revenue stays more stable.
Yes, right? To some extent, yes. That's part of why I actually considered using variable price, because most models have used constant price. So that is part of what reduces the willingness of Australian farmers. Technically, from our perspective, must be reducing their willingness to take up insurance because of that covariance. And that covariance is just being recognized by the person who is coming up with the revenue insurance. So that has to be recognized. So most insurance will not work because farmers are aware of this covariance. But I'm also saying that as a result of that, insurance could still work because the farmers that will be worst hit are the farmers that would have the least benefit. As I said, two farmers, this one has lost everything, this one had less than 50%. So all the benefits of the loss of this farmer will go to this farmer. That's why it's a very, very strange problem that people just really need to get on board. But it's not so much of the priority according to the farmers, because they are just a little part of it. But I say that Australians are actually benefiting from rural labor, because farmers are putting, they are all in all on their farms, they are directly there.